episode 587 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Marvel Chronology episode, and we're moving on from Secret Wars, as I told you all for the last few episodes. We're on to the Thanos reading order now, the Thanos Chronology. And again, this is not a reading order where we're going to be talking about Thanos in terms of a publication history. So what I mean by that is the first episode I'm covering today is not the first appearance of Thanos in the Marvel Universe that happened in Iron Man 55 back in the 60s or early 70s. I think it was the 60s. But we're actually going to go back and look at some of the earliest stories of Thanos, which would be from the Thanos Rising series, which kind of gives an origin of Thanos in terms of him being born and, you know, growing up on Titan and kind of the things that happened there. So it's a 5-issue miniseries, Thanos Rising, and it's written by Jason Aaron. And as I said, it's the early days of Thanos, but it brings him up to modern times. And so I almost wonder, you know, and I reread the entire series in preparation to start covering it recently, and I'm not sure. It's been a long time since I've read the classic Thanos stuff from like 1973, I guess, now that I'm looking at the chronology, is when Thanos first showed up in Iron Man. Well, actually, it was 1968 that he showed up in Iron Man 55, but then his next appearance is in Warlock and the Infinity Watch, and that's from 77, and then it kind of jumps around, right, in terms of where it shows up based on the story that the writer is telling. So even though it's not his first published appearance, you know, we start talking about Thanos Rising from 2013, I'm wondering as we get to the end of this Thanos Rising series, if it's really in the right place, you know what I'm saying? We may go back or as we continue and we go back further back in time in terms of publishing history, we might get to some points where we're like, oh, well, yeah, Iron Man 55 seems like it would have taken place like right around the time of issue 3, and issues 4 and 5 seem like they would have actually been after some of the, you know, classic era Thanos. But I think for the most part, it's a pretty good reading order. So I want to give props to the Crushing Crisis website. Obviously, I'll put a link in the show notes so you can go there and check it out for yourself. It's pretty extensive. It divides it up into a few categories here. There's 9 different categories. It starts with Thanos Rising as a sort of an era, you know, the first era, and then we go Classic Thanos, which it says is 1973 to 1977, but again, that first appearance in Iron Man is from 1968. So there's a few late 60s. There's another Captain Marvel story in here from 1968. There's a few other series in here, you know, from other years. Then after the Classic Thanos, we got a big gap because he doesn't really show up again. Because if you look at the last entry in the Classic Thanos era here, the last one is Death of Captain Marvel, where at that time, technically in the comic Marvel Universe, Thanos was already dead, but he does show up kind of as a flashback, and also he kind of escorts Captain Marvel to the other side. So, you know, if you've ever read that classic series, you'll know what I'm talking about. So anyway, he doesn't. Thanos really went off stage then at that point for all, like 8 years or so, and he didn't show up again until the Thanos Quest, where he's going after the Infinity Gauntlet, and then of course he shows up in the Infinity Gauntlet, and then we've got, you know, the Infinity War and the Infinity Crusade, all that kind of stuff. So that's the next era, and then you've got the after the Infinity trilogy, when we had the Infinity Watch miniseries, Adam Warlock, Thanos were in that. Then we've got Infinite Abyss and Thanos Volume 1 from 2002 to 2004. We've got the Annihilation Saga, which actually covers a lot more than just the Annihilation event from 2006 to 2011. And then we've got Thanos Returns and the new Infinity Saga from 2012 to 2015. And then there's probably going to be some overlap. We've got Jonathan Hickman's Avengers run, which Thanos is figures prominently in, and also that Infinity series that came out actually in 2013, right after the Thanos Rising had ended, that Infinity event came out. And then we'll finish up with the all-new, all-different Marvel, which is 2015 up through the present. I do want to specifically mention the Cosmic Ghost Rider series from Donny Cates, because that has baby Thanos in it as well. But I think for the purposes of this, we're going to treat that. I mean, it's yet to be finished, I think. I'm not sure if the last issue's come out. I dropped off after, I think, issue two or three. But I think for the purposes of this, we're going to treat that as kind of out of continuity. I'm not sure where it would fit in at this point. And then obviously we still have Thanos showing up in modern comics. So we may add some stuff on at the very end. But based on the length of this chronology, it's going to take a long time, right? So, you know, there's going to be plenty of more Thanos stories told most likely before we get to the end of this thing. And again, I'm not sure that we're going to go all the way through to the end of this, because the whole reason I shifted was we wanted to get off Secret Wars. We'd been on Secret Wars for quite a while. And the next part of the Secret Wars chronology was the Annihilation event, right? And we, you know, I wanted some background on that and catch up on the cosmic corner of the Marvel Universe before shifting back to the Secret Wars chronology. So I thought, hey, let's go and just do Thanos. That'll eventually lead into the Annihilation saga. So when I'm, you know, sitting here looking at this reading order that Christian Kreisches has put together, we're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 eras before we get to that. So, you know, based on how many issues there might or might not be, it's going to take, you know, it's going to take a little bit. But I do find it interesting that all the Infinity trilogies and such are in here. So that's really cool, because that'll give us a chance to talk about some of that classic stuff as well. So you can think of it as a Thanos reading order. You can also think of it as an Infinity reading order, so to speak, because when you're talking about Infinity and the Infinity Gems or Infinity Stones, as they're known in the movies, you're always talking Thanos, right? Like he's never far away from a story that is about those powerful artifacts. So let's go ahead and dive in to Thanos Rising number one. I'll start off by giving the creative team. I already mentioned it was written by Jason Aaron. The art is by Simone Bianchi. We've got colors by Simone Peruzzo and letters by Clayton Cowles. We've also got the cover by Simone Bianchi with variant covers by Marco Djurjevic and Scotty Young. You know, Scotty Young's typical cartoony looking art on Thanos always kind of makes me laugh. So we look at now, present day, Titan, the second largest moon of Saturn. And the story starts off with some exposition saying, once every solar cycle, a lone visitor comes to this silent, frozen world to walk upon the ashes of the great city where he was born, the utopia he left in ruins. And so we see Thanos striding across the surface of Titan. And it's really cool art here by Simone Bianchi. It's cosmic and it's epic, but it's also destruction and wreckage. So it suits the story that Aaron's telling right from the start very, very well. And the attention to detail that Bianchi gives to the art is absolutely incredible, to the point where the third panel as we of this page, as we see Thanos striding, or actually it's the fourth panel rather, as we see Thanos striding across the surface of Titan, he's literally putting his footstep down and we see the dirt on the ground disturbed and kind of kicked up a little bit by Thanos' strides, kind of showing, you know, just the impact of Thanos, the kind of the weight of him, both literally and figuratively. So Thanos is here to visit the grave of his mother, not to revel in the destruction of his homeworld, which was one of the first of a long list of his conquests, but instead he's here to, as I said, visit the grave of his mother and remember who he is. And as he stands there in front of the grave of Susan, he remembers back. He hears voices in his head saying, push, Susan, you're almost there. many years ago. We're on, as we turn the page, we're on Titan, Underground City of the Eternals. And we have some word balloons here with Susan saying, what's wrong? Why does it hurt so much? The baby's tangled in the cord. And eventually the baby is born. And the nurse is like, oh my God, by all that is holy. And the doctor tells Alar's mentor, as he's known, one of the premier Eternals of the day. And the doctor's apologizing, saying, I'm sorry, Alar's, but I'm afraid it's going to live, right? And then says, we'll run some genetic tests to find out why it's this way. And Alar's says, keep your hands off my child. I must see him with my own eyes. And as he looks upon him, even though there's been this genetic mutation and Thanos doesn't look like an Eternal, he doesn't look human, Alar's is immediately fascinated with him, saying he's so perfect, he's so strong, the child who refused to die, my darling Thanos. And Susan is asking to see him, and Alar says, of course, go to your mother, little one. And Susan, as she lays eyes on Thanos, is immediately horrified, and she reaches for a scalpel on the side table, saying, we have to kill it before it grows. And something in the eyes has touched her, and she's terrified, and perhaps she has a premonition, perhaps she sees into the soul of this life that she has just come from her own, and realizes the ultimate evil that's housed there. And Alar's grabs her arm and prevents her from stabbing Thanos, and she's screaming at him to let go. We have to kill it. Meanwhile, Alar's is saying, doctor, do something. We must sedate her. And Susan continues her ranting, saying, look at his eyes. Don't you see the death? If we don't kill it now, we're all going to. And then the doctor gives her some sedatives, and her voice is fading out, saying, we're all going to die. Just look at that thing. It isn't my son. That's a monster. And so we flash forward several years here, and Thanos is in primary school. He's sitting off to the side as children play in front of him, and somebody comes up to him and says, you look weird. You know, he's small, he's diminutive, he's got that purple skin, and he certainly doesn't look like the other children who look pretty much like normal human children. And Thanos isn't taken aback by someone telling him he looks weird. He says, my unusual appearance is merely the result of a simple genetic mutation. I assure you it's nothing contagious. And another of the children says, you're one of Mentor's sons, aren't you? You know, we've heard about you. And Thanos' reply is, well, you've likely heard of my brother Eros, Star Fox, as you may know him from his Avengers days. He says, he's far more gregarious, if you'd like me to introduce you. They say, no, it's you that we want to talk to. It's you that we want to meet. You're Thanos, right? And Thanos says, I don't want any trouble. And it surprises me, you know, he's probably like 8 years old here, maybe 10 years old. He's polite. He's gentle. It clearly belies what's going to come later, right? Which I suppose is the point of the story and why Aaron wanted to tell it. You know, based on this story that Aaron tells, the tale as it unfolds, Thanos didn't come out of the womb as some monster. It seems like, and we'll talk about this more as we get toward the end of the series, but it seems like Aaron ultimately says that it was Thanos' destiny to become this evil being, this force of nature. But at the same time, there's some nurture effects there as well that we'll get into. So anyway, back to the story. One of the children saying, everybody says you're the smartest in school. And Thanos seems surprised by that. He's like, really? Is that what they say about me? Like, yeah, but why are you sitting here by yourself? It's supposed to be playtime. What are you doing? And Thanos says, I like drawing. I just like to draw sometimes. And they're like, why don't you play with us? Or do you only do smart stuff? And Thanos is like, I'm sorry, do what now? What is that? Which seems a little weird to me, you know, that he's as old as he seems to be. I mean, maybe he's not. Maybe he's not 10 years old as I'm postulating. Maybe he's only 5. But still, it just seems like he should know what play is. I mean, don't kids kind of inherently know what play is? I suppose if we think about, he doesn't have his mother around, if, you know, she's been committed to some sort of mental institution because Thanos' birth drove her crazy. Mentor is always engaged in some kind of scientific research or whatever, you know, holed up in his laboratory. Eros is a younger brother, I think. So he may not be around at this point to so that Thanos has someone to play with. So I guess it's possible that he wouldn't really ever have learned. It's not something that is inherent in Thanos himself. So the other thing that's interesting is Thanos runs off to play with these other children. He leaves his sketchbook behind and the wind kind of blows it open and we see what he was drawing. You know, he mentioned to the kids that he doesn't really play, but when he feels like doing something on his own, he often draws. And we see what he's drawing is the corpse of a lizard that will come to be important to the story later on. These lizards that I think the story mentions, they inhabit Titans sort of like fleas. So they're plentiful. And early on, you know, as much as Thanos seems innocent and very naive and sort of timid and respectful and polite, there's already the fascination with death. I mean, what 5 or 10 year old is going to choose to draw in detail the corpse of this, you know, rotting lizard with, you know, the flies, you know, buzzing around it and everything? It's a little disturbing. So as we turn the page, we see that we are looking at Thanos's home, where Mentor has his lab, and he's talking about the annual science celebration that's coming up, and he thought he would prepare a report on his own genetic makeup and explain to the other children how he's different and why he's different. And he's also asking for access to the family files so that he can perhaps learn how Mentor and Susan met, and maybe even Mentor would just want to tell him, because one of Thanos's friends, Argos, they met while on a tour of all 62 moons of Saturn, and he's trying to engage with this father, and Mentor's completely ignoring him. Finally turns to him and says, "Thanos, did you say something? I'm sorry, I'm very busy." And Thanos feels dismissed and says, "You know, nothing. It's nothing, Father. I'll leave you to your work." And instead, Thanos goes to visit his mother and talks about the recurring dream he has of the day that he was born. Someone started screaming and was trying to stab him with a knife. Obviously, we know that to be Susan, the mother who saw death in Thanos' eyes and wanted to stab him. And we do see that as Thanos visits Susan, she is indeed committed to some sort of mental health institution, the padded walls, the straitjacket, the whole nine yards, which I find a little strange, be that Titan is so advanced as far as civilization. You would think their medicine, you know, they would be able to like look at Susan's brain and determine, you know, is she really crazy? Be able to help her beyond just locking her up in a padded room. It doesn't quite track with everything else we know of Titan. So anyway, Thanos is like, "It's a really alarming dream, and I've had it almost every night for the last 4 years. Maybe that's how old he is. Maybe he's 4. I don't know. He definitely seems older. But he's like, "But I did discover a cure for the dream. I just don't sleep anymore." And then he says, I plan on asking Cythere to be my girlfriend. Girls enjoy flowers, right? I've been developing my own original genus. I'll bring you some tomorrow, maybe, or maybe when you feel like coming home." And the whole time Thanos is talking to his mother, she's got the terrified look on her face, tears coming out of her eyes, because she sees that death in him. She sees that evil. So as we turn the page, it seems like Thanos has gotten a little older. He's playing with some friends again. There are actually some female students looking on as well, and they're talking about Thanos and why he's purple, and all of a sudden he seems to be everybody's friend, and he's cute, and some of the girls are kind of arguing, "Well, are you kidding? All that purple? You think he's cute?" He's like, "Well, everybody else looks so normal. His mutation's like fascinating from a genetic perspective, and it just seems different, right?" And then we see a new girl with some green lips, and she seems to be talking to them, talking to, you know, his name is Thanos, and he's more than a simple mutation. He's much more, but he doesn't know it yet. And the girls are like, "Everybody shouldn't look at him at once. We don't want him to, you know, seem like we're staring at him," you know, typical kind of elementary school kind of stuff. And the girl with the green eyes and the green lips says, "I want to see him. He will see me staring at him one way or another. And then we shift to Thanos in the classroom, and they're going to be dissecting those lizards that I was talking about earlier. They're going to begin with an incision along the stomach and peel back the skin and then work on identifying the organs. There will be a bit of blood, but don't worry. They're not into murder at all on Titan. It's just not something that's part of their culture. They don't kill for pleasure. They don't even kill for scientific study. All these animals died of natural causes. They're just scientists, not monsters. And as Thanos is, and this is interesting again, because he was literally drawing the desiccated corpse, the rotting corpse of one of these lizards earlier. And now all of a sudden when one of them is right there in front of him, I guess maybe because it's still wet, so to speak, there's still blood. It seems much more alive, much more fresh. Thanos has a bit of a reaction and goes running out of the classroom vomiting. And the teacher's like, "Thanos, are you all right, dear boy?" And so Thanos is outside, and there's a voice from off panel saying, "It's always rough, the first dissection." And we see, again, it's that girl with the green lips and the green eyes. And she said, "It does get easier, you'll see." And Thanos, for his part, responds, "I don't want it to get easier. I don't ever want to cut open another living thing." And the girl says, "Well, don't you want to be a scientist someday like your father?" And Thanos is like, do I know you? You seem..." She says, "Yeah, you see me around. Everybody knows your father. He runs the whole planet. And if you want to be a scientist like him, you can't be squeamish over one little lizard." And Thanos' response is, "Well, maybe I'm not meant to be like a scientist, you know?" Like, and the girl again, "You just need some time to think about it, right? You're special. Trust me. You're going places. You're going places, and you'll never forget." And as we turn the page, Thanos and some of his friends are exploring a cave, and one of them's asking if Thanos is sure it's safe. And he's like, "Yeah, I just want to show you these jewel formations. They're said to be incredible. We might even find some gems. Just follow me." And all of a sudden, there's an earthquake. There's a cave-in, and Thanos is separated from everyone else. And he's trying to dig himself out. And finally, after 3 days, he's thinking, "I must be getting close to the others. We couldn't have been separated by any more than this. I hope they're as okay as I am." And the little chamber that Thanos is in, there are some lizards in there that are sniffing at him. And he tells them, "It's okay. It doesn't matter how long I'm down here. I won't get hungry enough to eat you, not any of you. But there are a lot of you today, right? So I must be getting close to the surface." So little friends lead on, and Thanos continues to dig. He finally manages to dig himself out, and he's like, "What's that noise? Is anyone hurt? Are you?" And then he sees the horror. He sees the lizards there. He sees the remains of his friends who were also trapped in the cave-in, but they didn't fare so well as Thanos. They're, you know, perhaps due to Thanos's hardier kind of constitution, you know, the color of his skin, and his skin's thicker and tougher. The lizards never bothered him, but they have eaten his friends, literally to the bone almost. And Thanos is horrified. And so shortly at school, the children are talking about it the way young kids will when some kind of tragedy has befallen, and the rumor mill takes over, and they've overheard snippets of conversation from their parents about, you know, what happened and what the state of these kids were in. And they're talking about how the kids had been eaten down to the bone and how terrible it is because no child has died on Titan in over 200 years. Another is wondering what they were even doing in the caves, because since they were off limits and being trapped there would just be so horrible, and everybody died, you know, everybody but Thanos. And we get some exposition here with Aaron talking about years later, when Thanos had become what he was destined to become. Many people on Titan would look back to the death of those children and decide that Thanos had murdered them. You know, revisionist history in a way, that Thanos lured them to the caves just to kill these children and then left their bodies for the lizards to dispose of. It's not true, but at the same time, it was Thanos's idea to go to the caves, right? And what other machinations or motivations might be going on in Thanos' subconscious. I mean, I kind of doubt, just from the nature of it, I kind of doubt that he did it on purpose in any way, shape, or form, but it is just another piece of the puzzle, right? You know, here's this child that's already isolated, doesn't make friends easily, finally starts to make some friends, doesn't get much love or isn't nurtured at home. And so does finally make some friends, but then those friends die. And so, yeah. And then the fascination with death, the seeds are already there. So the exposition says, in those dark caves, they imagined the monster hiding inside Thanos had first emerged, and they would be half right. And so Thanos, as he sits, we see him sit, and the lizards that are plentiful, he's staring at one, and we get a voice off panel saying, it's okay. And it's that girl who seems omnipresent in Thanos' life. You kind of wonder why she wasn't in the caves herself. And Thanos responds, leave me alone. And the girl says, you know, what you're feeling is not wrong. It's natural. And Thanos' reply is, go away. You don't know a thing about me. And the girl encourages him to maybe give in to those deeper urges, those deeper feelings that he's feeling. And she says, I know if you really love them, you would not let anything hold you back. And we see Thanos thinking about that and deciding to go back to the caves and telling the young girl who follows him that she may not want to watch this. She says, don't worry about me. Just do what you came to do. And we see Thanos remove a knife from his belt as the girl looks on and says, show me who you are, Thanos of Titan, show them all. And Thanos begins slaughtering all the lizards that were in that cave. So he's gone from somebody that wouldn't even cut open or had a hard time cutting open an already dead lizard to saying to, you know, living lizards, don't worry, I would never hurt you. I would never eat you. You're completely safe with me. And now he's lost his friends to these lizards, and it doesn't seem like it's with a sense of justice that he's attacking these lizards. It's out of a sense of revenge. It's negative in its way, right? I mean, when you stop to think about it, yes, it was a horrible accident, and these lizards are just being true to their nature. You know, the children, the lizards were trapped in the cave-in as well, and there wasn't food there. And so what did they feed on? I mean, for all we know, the cave-in may have killed the kids, right? They may have already been dead, and the lizards are just, you know, vultures feasting on, you know, kind of roadkill, so to speak, the bodies of the children that were already dead. So, but Thanos doesn't think of it that way. Despite the fact that he considers himself a scientist, he knows the truth of it. He's giving in to his darker natures. He's being very much encouraged by this girl who seems to have nothing but malice in her. She seems very manipulative. She seems very evil. And for some reason, Thanos is he's very interested in her. He's very, even though he doesn't even really know it himself yet, it seems, he does seem somewhat infatuated with her, and in a way is seeking her her approval. So with a little bit of encouragement from her, he's gone from, you know, this squeamish young boy to all of a sudden this violent child lashing out. And again, you got to go back to the fact that he doesn't have anyone in his home who might be able to talk to him about death and help him understand, you know, the cycle of life, and that although this is a terrible tragedy, you can't carry it around with you, and you know, you can't let it affect you certain ways. He has no way to process his grief, right? The fact that he's lost these friends. And so it's almost only natural for him to lash out like this, because he has no way to process his feelings and his grief and his loneliness, and I imagine somewhat his guilt for the fact that he was the only one that survived. You know, that's part of it, whereas all his other friends didn't. And also guilt over the fact that it was his idea to go check out these caves, right? Despite the fact that they were off limits. So I think it's a good story. It's interesting to think about Thanos as being formed, being like molded into what he would eventually become, you know, the murderous mad Titan, as opposed to he was just born that way. Right. I mean, the nature versus nurture thing, as concepts have always fascinated me. It's something my wife and I talk about all the time about our kids, you know, like, oh, I wonder where she gets that from. And, you know, you can say, oh, it gets it from this parent, gets it from that parent, whatever. And different environments and, you know, kids are different and they're unique. And you could take two kids and raise them in the exact same environment the same way and they don't turn out, you know, exactly the same. And all that stuff is fascinating to me. So when you take a character as complex as Thanos, who's become so popular, and because of that popularity, sometimes he's almost portrayed as an anti-hero at various times, and he's different. Writers have tried to take him on redemptive arcs before, and does that really work? I mean, there's no redemption here for Thanos in the story that Aaron is telling. It's really the story of how he became what he became. And it's also somewhat tragic in a way, because as you follow the story, you can see little points, little crossroads, right? Where if things had only gone just a little bit differently, or if somebody had only been there to kind of guide Thanos, if his father had been more present, if his mother hadn't been crazy, if he had some good friends, if this tragedy here wouldn't have happened, and those friends that died in this cave-in had instead lived and weren't murdered by lizards and had become good friends with Thanos, and he had felt a connection with them, how might things have been different? So, you know, it's always fun to play what if in fictional stories. But again, I think Aaron is expertly crafting this story in such a way that it feels like realistic, because it's a little bit messy and it's a little bit like a series of events, right, that eventually lead him to become what he is. And that's so kind of true to life in a way. You know, there are so many times where you look at events that happen in life, or and look at certain tragedies that have occurred in history, and it's always are oftentimes a series of events that lead to that. And you think, you know, looking back on it with the perspective of, you know, hindsight, you know, hindsight's 2020 and all that, you can say, oh, if only this one little thing had gone differently, the entire course of history would have been changed. And it definitely feels like that with Thanos. And again, it's a big departure from what has come before, because I think before this series, it was always like, well, he was just kind of born that way, and that's how he was. And it telling a story this way, with the complexity of it and the little crossroads and the little events that kind of nudge Thanos down the path to what he eventually becomes, it makes him somewhat a more tragic figure, but also you kind of understand and empathize with him more. But it also emphasizes just how terrible a character he is in terms of his capacity for evil and destruction. And, you know, he's this terrible force of nature, because there were so many times where he himself could have made a different choice, but he never does make that choice, right? He always chooses evil or wrong or the bad side of things, or however you want to label it. And again, it makes him somewhat more terrifying in a way, because you're like, man, if like a normal person that has like a normal amount of emotion would have done this instead, right? And the choices that he makes make him seem, you know, that much more terrifying in a way. So I really like this series. And I think it's a great place to start with understanding who Thanos is. And I haven't seen any of the Avengers movies, including the latest one. And so I wonder how well this version of Thanos jives with the Marvel MCU version. I will see those movies eventually. And maybe now would be a good time, since we're doing the Thanos chronology, to go check those out. So maybe I will, once we get a little further down the chronology, or maybe once Thanos Rising is finished. Pretty far behind. I'd have to start watching a lot of them, but something I've been planning on doing anyway. So perhaps if I can find time, now would be a perfect time, because then it would allow me to compare and contrast, right? Like, does this origin, does this story that Jason Aaron's telling in Thanos Rising gel with the eco warrior? Like, I've heard, you know, rumors that Thanos is worried about the resources of the universe, and that's why he snaps his fingers and erases half of the universe in Infinity War, which I always kind of wondered, like, well, if he's worried about the amount of resources, couldn't he just snap his fingers and create more resources instead? So I don't know, just a thought. Anyway, I think this is a really great story. The art by Simone Bianchi is incredible. It's incredibly detailed. And it what he does a great job of is making it emotional without taking a lot of advantage of facial expression, right? Because, I mean, there are plenty of panels in here where you can get some emotion from Thanos's eyes, especially. And it usually has to do with the not only the size of the eyes and the way Bianchi has rendered them, but also with the panel. Like usually if you're trying to show surprise, he'll zoom way in on Thanos's eyes. But again, it's not as easy to portray emotion in somebody who doesn't have like human features, right? And Bianchi does a great job with that, but he also does a great job of infusing the story with emotion, not in the usual ways, like using body language, using texture, using panel layout, because he doesn't necessarily have the crutch of human facial expressions to lean on. Not that it's a crutch, but he doesn't have the advantage, I guess, or the option, maybe is the best word to use, of showing facial expression and emotion in a human face, because Thanos doesn't have a human face. So again, I think the art is done really, really well. The colors by Simone Peruzzi are good. Also, a lot of purples, a lot of bluish, which suits the story when you're trying to tell a story that's alien, you know, on an alien world. And, you know, Thanos himself obviously is purple. So, you know, the caves where Thanos sees his children or his friends killed, you know, a lot of blue and green, and it gives that tone and that mood of something ominous happening. So again, I think the art is absolutely spectacular. The final page, especially where Thanos starts slaughtering the lizards, is a very powerful image. And the other thing that I'll say about the colors, we started off the story with Thanos returning to Titan and, striding across its surface of the destruction of the city. And we see little bits of Thanos's costume as we zoom in on him slowly that like literally appear to glow. They really jump off the page, these yellows that the colorist, Peruzzi has infused them with. I always love that when artists are able to use a color and kind of brighten it up and give kind of context to it to make it look like it's glowing. It's something that's really hard to do, you know, in a two-dimensional image, and she does a great job of that. So really, really interesting story. I'm happy that we're on the Thanos chronology now, because it's really interesting, and it's great to start with this story of Thanos as a young child with this incredible artwork. So I think that's going to do it for this episode. I want to thank everybody for joining. As always, please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.